From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, July 18th, 2017. And on this day, a bill in the Senate would make it easier for first responders to get treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. And what's happening with the traffic around Acadia National Park? That's ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Maine's already crowded race to replace Governor Paula Page in 2018 when he terms out has another runner. Jim Boyle, a former state senator from Gorham, has announced his candidacy. Steve Missler has details.
Boyle served one term in the Maine Senate. Now he's the sixth Democrat to jump into a race that has 11 candidates so far. Boyle lives in Gorham and runs an environmental consulting company in Westbrook. In the press release announcing his candidacy, Boyle depicted a Maine economy that's leaving some behind and a dysfunctional state government. Boyle, now 58, was elected to the Senate in 2012. He was defeated by Republican Amy Volk, despite a big advantage in spending by groups independent of his campaign. He joined Sanford Guardsman and attorney Adam Cody, Attorney General Janet Mills, former House Speaker Mark Eaves, lobbyist and progressive activist Betsy Sweet, and Patrick Eisenhart as those seeking the Democratic nomination next June. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Maine Senator Susan Collins says she'll oppose efforts by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell to repeal Obamacare before a replacement for the health care law is developed. Collins says she voted against this approach in 2015 and does not think it's going to be constructive. In a statement, Maine Independent Senator Angus King says Congress has a real opportunity to do something on a bipartisan basis to improve the country's present health care delivery system. This week, Maine lawmakers will consider whether to make it easier for first responders to receive treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. If approved, PTSD would be considered a work-related injury for police, firefighters, and EMTs. Supporters say it would reduce stigma and make it easier to receive treatment, but the Maine Municipal Association says it's a mismatched solution that fails to prevent PTSD. Patty White has more.
For 25 years, Roger Gay worked for the Maine Warden Service, tracking poachers, lost hunters, and hikers. But the job took a personal toll. He responded to numerous fatalities and had to deliver bad news to grieving families.
Inevitably, you kind of feel like you're kind of, in a way, causing that grief to happen because, you know, you bring it.
After Hurricane Katrina in 2005, Gay went to New Orleans to recover bodies. And that's when he hit a breaking point. He developed migraines and couldn't concentrate. He started avoiding certain aspects of his job because he felt he could easily explode. Gay suspected he had PTSD because the Warden Service educates its officers about it. Even so, he says he was reluctant to ask for help.
The challenge that you run into in law enforcement is you really don't want to say anything because then what? Right? You get put on the sidelines or who knows what's going to happen to you. So the tendency is to absorb it and stay quiet and stay in your misery. And meanwhile, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse.
A bill before the Maine legislature aims to carve an easier path for first responders like Gay to get help. It would give presumptive eligibility for PTSD under workers' compensation. That means if a psychiatrist makes a PTSD diagnosis, it would be presumed to be work-related. That's a departure from the current system where first responders have to prove their PTSD stems from their work.
If I work at UPS and I pick up boxes all day long, I know my back may hurt. It is a workplace injury. It's not a sign that I'm weak or that I need to toughen it up.
Jenna Maynard is the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Maine, which helped draft the bill. Similar laws have passed in Canada, and a handful of states are also considering them. Maynard says treating PTSD as a workplace injury not only gives better access to treatment, it reduces stigma in a profession based on helping others.
The bottom line is we need to send a clear message to them that their mental health matters and that we stand with law enforcement.
If there is a perceived stigma in the community, there might be other ways to address that would be more effective.
Garrett Corbin is a legislative advocate for the Maine Municipal Association. He says the MMA supports first responders getting mental health treatment, but he says efforts should focus on preventing PTSD, and this bill doesn't do that. In addition, he says this makes a fundamental change to workers' comp.
It will be the municipal employer who has the burden of disproving PTSD rather than the employee who has the burden of proving that they have developed PTSD in the course of their employment.
And that potentially means more costs for property taxpayers, says Corbin, from legal fees. The Maine Municipal Association, along with the Workers' Compensation Coordinating Council, which represents employers, were the only two organizations to testify against the bill during a public hearing in March. The Maine State Federation of Firefighters, the Maine State Troopers Association, and the Maine Chiefs of Police are among nearly two dozen organizations and individuals who came to testify in support.
Those that are taken care of us should be taken care of.
Troy Morton is the Penobscot County Sheriff.
I think we're doing a much better job with our military, and it's time that this is done in public safety.
Roger Gay, the retired game warden, says the current system that puts the burden of proof on first responders to prove their PTSD is work-related creates barriers that can feel insurmountable.
Barriers, when you're sitting in the chair with PTSD, are the size of Mount Katahdin, right? Because you're not thinking clearly, you're not thinking rationally, and you put a barrier in front of me, it might be 2 inches high, and I can't get over it because mentally I'm a mess.
After he struggled alone with PTSD for 9 months, Gay says two colleagues intervened and encouraged him to get treatment, which he says has helped him recover. But he says not everyone is that fortunate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The view from the top is magnificent, but getting to the summit of Cadillac Mountain at Acadia National Park has been taking a little longer this year. Increasing numbers of visitors have been coming to Mount Desert Island, and this month alone, the roads leading to the summit and other popular park attractions have been closed 10 times after parking areas reached full capacity. AJ Higgins has more.
Many of the tourists who boarded the Island Explorer buses at Acadia National Park over the July 4th holiday got to the Cadillac summit in reasonable time as compared to those who brought cars. But even the buses were eventually shut out after the rangers closed the upbound lane due to heavy traffic, ensuring that park attractions such as Cadillac, Ocean Drive, Sand Beach, and Scudic Point remain readily accessible by car can be a challenge for park officials and tough on visitors.
I think it would be a little bit discouraging, yes.
Adrian Gill, who drove up to Maine from Montville, New Jersey, says this kind of congestion is manageable, but visitors have to take some responsibility.
If they plan ahead, then it shouldn't be a problem. I mean, if you're going to New York and you try to go into any of the major sites there, you've got to plan ahead, sometimes 2 or 3 months ahead. Otherwise, you're going to not be able to get on there. And things like Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty, you've got to plan ahead.
We got up here and there was no place to park. We didn't have to wait at the base, but we had to drive around, and there was no place to park.
Gardner Fogg of Missouri makes a fairly regular pilgrimage to Acadia each year. Last summer, during the park's 100th anniversary, he ran into some traffic snarls. But he says traffic issues could be improved if the park were to put more information online and on site.
I think that it's interesting if they were to post something that this is not a day that you're going to get onto the top of the mountain or something similar to that would be really helpful, either at the entrance or at one of these types of places where you'd be warned ahead of time.
At park headquarters, spokesman John Kelly says that kind of advance warning system is already in place with rangers stationed at the entranceways to popular attractions and movable information signs to advise visitors of current traffic conditions. Encouraging visitors to use the Island Explorer buses, Ollie's trolley, or even bicycles, he says, helps reduce traffic jams. And Kelly says that the National Park Service is halfway through a 3-year comprehensive long-range transportation plan to alleviate traffic and parking issues. A number of potential solutions have already been offered.
We actually heard a full range of ideas. We heard monorails and aerial trams and closing the park entirely to all vehicles.
Kelly says the challenge is to safely manage traffic and still provide tourists with a quality Acadia experience. Over the last 2 years, he says park officials have become much more in tune with the dynamics of when and where bottlenecks will occur.
So if we get a couple of days in a row of really bad weather, rainy, cloudy weather, we know that next day, after that stretch of bad weather, we're going to get a big influx of people.
In addition to the transportation study and careful monitoring, the park is also working with the Friends of Acadia, a Bar Harbor-based organization that promotes the ecological stewardship of the park. Friends President and CEO David McDonald says the group has paid for parking stewards at the popular sites and is providing the Park Service with information on traffic movement in the area.
We've been tracking it. We've been commenting on it. While it's a little frustrating that the process takes 2 to 3 years, we really do support the more comprehensive approach.
In the meantime, there are no signs that Acadia has become any less popular. Last year, more than 3.3 million people visited Acadia National Park, shattering all records. McDonald says visitation could match or surpass that number this year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Tuesday, July 18th, 2017. Thanks to Ed Moran and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.